Welcome to GonkCast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're continuing our run through various Autechre odds and ends by diving deep into 2019's Warp Tapes 89 to 93, two hour-long mixes of some of AE's earliest material, first broadcast on NTS Radio as part of Warp's 30th anniversary celebration, and then officially released for free as a digital download on the AE store. Next week, we'll do another listener email episode, and we'll find some cool Lucy to discuss as well on that episode. But our next proper episode, 2 weeks from now, will be about both of Warp's artificial intelligence compilations. While we'll obviously go heavy on the Autechre contributions, the tracks Crystal, The Egg, and Chatter, but we're going to have some fun discussing most of the other tracks as well and just the compilations as a whole. So, if you've got thoughts on the artificial intelligence comps, AE related or not, we want to add them to that conversation, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. And again, we'll have that listener email next week, that listener email episode next week, rather. So, feel free to write us about anything else as well, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. All right, Dan, what background info do we need to know about Autechre's Warp Tapes 89 to 93?
Yeah, all the way back in June of 2019, Warp Records celebrated its 30th anniversary with 3 days of live broadcasts on NTS Radio. Dozens of Warp artists supplied exclusive mixes, live sessions, videos, unreleased material, new compositions, and experimental freeform radio. And Autechre contributed 2 hour-long mixes titled Warp Tapes 89 to 93, Part 1 and Part 2. As Gabe mentioned, both parts were soon made free to download from the AE store. The link is still there, by the way, in case you missed it. But because no description is provided, there's some debate about what the mix actually is. The most popular theory is that Autechre gave Warp tons of demos when they first signed. There are tapes depicted on the cover art, and Warp picked their favorites for Incunabula, which would explain why Sean and Rob consider Incunabula a compilation, and Amber their first proper album. That would make the Warp tapes a new mix of just some of this material, but others think that this mix was actually made back in the 90s, basically the same thing they did for Lego Feet on Scam Records, and that it was just sitting in the vaults all this time. We do our best to get the bottom of that.
Yeah. In regard to reception, this freebie wasn't really reviewed by any major publications, though The Wire did rank it at number 10 in their archival releases of 2019 list, calling it, quote, a kaleidoscopic vision of electro taken to its outer limits on the cusp of the rave explosion. But I also wanted to read this from listener Joe, who writes, the sense I get is that it's more of an interesting curiosity to even the hardcore AE fans, rather than the kind of game-changing obsessions that the old Tunes tapes and the SoundCloud dump were to Boards of Canada's and Richard D. James's respective fan bases. I think a lot of this has to do with the sheer amount of official releases that Autechre have in comparison. While what's officially out there can be overwhelming for even hardcore AE fans to digest, hardcore fans of RDJ and especially BOC have far less, and every scrap is that much more essential. This is something I definitely want to return to later, but I would note that on Rate Your Music, the Warp Tapes are currently bolded and sitting at an impressive 3.79 average rating, and I've seen more than a few fans claim that this would have been just as trailblazing as, you know, Aphex Twin's Selected Ambient Works if Warp had just released it as is back in 93. Again, we can circle back around to these questions, but what's your sense, Dan, of the Warp Tapes' reputation among fans? Just a neat curiosity, a lost classic, what?
Well, you know, from the, like, bigger fans, you know, the ones we interact with, you know, on Reddit and Discord and stuff, it seems like people like this quite a bit. You know, especially I remember when they were airing, you know, chit-chatting with people and stuff. But wider, you know, a wider scope of the fan base, I think it maybe flies under the radar because like we said in the opening, you know, the link on the Autechre store is it's almost hidden. It's just like really stuck at the bottom there with no explanation or anything. So I think, like, unless you're you know, a big enough fan to have, you know, tuned into the broadcast or something, you may not even know about this.
Yeah, you know, and it doesn't have, like, I mean, it's not so far away from some Autechre releases, but like on Rate Your Music, it has definitely, like, on the shorter, fewer side of rating. So it does seem to fly under the radar a little bit. I mean, I was just kind of surprised because my understanding, like, the impression I got, I think, when it came out, there was just a lot of excitement, was that, you know, holy shit, like, this is, like, what a treat, you know, this is, like, almost the definitive look at Autechre's early years now. And yet, you know, I guess I should mention, you know, we didn't get like very many emails. We got a couple, and luckily they were like long, nice, detailed emails. So we got a lot of comments to read, but it's like, we didn't get very many emails. You know, some of these emailers, like listener Joe that I just mentioned, sort of noted that it seems like, you know, just kind of a curiosity. So I'm just like, I don't know. I just feel like maybe there was a lot of excitement at the time, and now that the dust is settled, like it's just kind of like it's already almost been forgotten or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I mean. You know, the people who were excited for it, you know, when it was going to air were people, you know, like me and you, and I'm sure a lot of the people that listen to this, you know, they tuned in for it. And then, yeah, there was this like huge excitement because, again, you know, just like the NTS sessions and stuff, we didn't really know what we were getting. I can't remember if they if they gave the title before it broadcast. I think they did. But even then, I mean, it kind of hints that it's, you know, old material, which makes people even more excited. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, once the dust is settled, especially, you know, we got Sign and Plus in the meantime and everything, it does sort of just seem like it's become more of a curiosity or something.
Yeah, maybe another one of the, I mean, we talked about this on a couple, like that AE Live 2016, 2018 thing, you know, like there was this kind of period where they released so much stuff that you can hardly blame people for forgetting about some of it or maybe never even getting around to it. Now, I want to ask about your previous familiarity with the Warp Tapes, but first let me read this from listener Ella, who writes, I only managed to listen to the second part live and I had to listen to the first part when it was released on their site. Hearing that part live was hype as fuck, and in my opinion, Warp Tapes was the very best part of Warp 30. So I'm wondering, did you turn into that first broadcast? And either way, have you spent much time with the Warp Tapes since then?
Yeah, I did. I did tune in. I tuned into a lot of the, you know, Warp 30. Yeah. I just left it on while, you know, while I was at work for those 3 days or whatever it was. But yeah, I definitely like, you know, made a point to tune in to the Autechre ones, you know, uninterrupted or whatever. As for spending a lot of time with it after, you know, maybe this speaks to our point earlier, but you know, when it first came, you know, when it was first broadcast, I, you know, immediately downloaded, you know, somebody ripped the stream. So I had that, you know, and listened to it a few times. And then once it got released, you know, on the AE store, you know, I replaced it for the higher quality. And, you know, I listened to it for, you know, probably a couple of weeks or so, but you know, 2020 was like not the year that I, you know, felt like listening to this high energy, you know, techno. So yeah, it sort of drifted off for me.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely tuned in for the broadcast. I was kind of just like you, where I like had Warp 30 playing for most of the day, like at that time. So it's kind of like, you know, it was on, but I was kind of half paying attention, and then kind of, you know, paying closer attention when something I cared about was on. And you know, I thought it was like just great fun and never expected it to get released, honestly. And I wasn't even like, oh, let me find a radio ripper or anything like that. I was just kind of like, wow, what a blast that was. So then, you know, it was such a treat when we got the proper, you know, download. And I don't know, much to my surprise, like based on that kind of initial reaction of just, oh, this was a fun experience, I found myself like listening to it all the time. And I feel like even up till now, I throw it on pretty often because it's just such a good time. Obviously we'll discuss that more, but it's like, I don't know, it's inoffensive to my wife. It's like one of the few Autechre things she can stand, and I love the sound of it. I don't know, it's just like good vibe. So it's like something I put on a lot. However, you know, this was the first time that I was like, you know, sitting down trying to like, you know, I usually let it wash over me. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time I was like, okay, at minute 8, this is the thing that happened, you know, that I like about this and all that stuff. But you know, before we start theorizing and discussing some big picture stuff that I brought up earlier, or that you brought up earlier, rather, I want to try to just take the music at face value. So without referencing, if you can, Lego Feet, Incunabula, et cetera, how would you describe the overall sound of Warp Tapes 89 to 93?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like incredibly energetic. Like it's pedal to the metal for you know, both of the 2 hour, you know, 1 hour mixes, 2 hours total. Very, very high energy, you know, very techno, very, you know, sort of, you know, rave dance kind of music. I was thinking, you know, like if I was a DJ or something, this is the kind of thing I would just like, I take the night off, I just play this, you know, like I just act like I made it or something. It like really made me think of being in a club setting, a you know, dance hall, you know, kind of setting.
Yeah, I mean, it's got you know, very old school kind of sound, obviously. A lot of, like, you know, just the sound palette, I think, of, like, acid and techno. Acid techno is all over this. But, you know, as you would expect from Autechre, I think those sounds are more often than not kind of, like, you know, shifted into, like, a more hip-hop kind of beat structure, you know what I mean? It's not, like, pounding four kicks ever, you know? There's always, like, I don't know. Overall, I feel like there's just, like, a really nice bounce to it, like, a really pleasant thing to, like, have on because, and, you know, if it played at the club or something, it would be a great thing to dance to because, like, there's just, like, lots of, like, rolling, bouncing kind of, you know, kicks and toms. There's a lot of, like, kind of, like, shuffly hi-hats and snares, especially, like, lots of rolling snares and stuff where it's, you know, it's not just, like, kind of a simple
it's
hip-hop pattern. Everything's bouncing.
Yeah, you know? It's very rarely, you know, just the snare on the two and the four. It does that, like, you know, thing constantly. You know, that's almost, like, the beat for a good portion of the tapes.
Yeah, and, like, these, like, wild, kind of almost verging on marching band stuff with the snares. And then sometimes there's even, like, claps mixed into it. It's just, like, you feel like everything's bouncing. And you also feel like everything is, like, picking the energy up. You know what I mean? Because a lot of these tracks, they're kind of, like, you know, we talked about this, like, with Inky and Obula especially and stuff, where it's, like, the structure of the track is, like, you kind of get the main motif and then more things get added and more things get added. It just adds layer after layer after layer. And so then by the end, you've got this like glorious crescendo of like 20 different components all playing at once. And I don't know, each one is just like, you know what I mean? Like pushes the pedal down a little bit harder. Cause it's like these kind of bubbly acid squelches that are kind of like, you know, really rhythmic or whatever will join in. And these like dancing kind of hi-hats and snares and stuff will kind of join in. And it's like, I don't know, each thing just like kind of, I don't know, picks it up even more. I will say that I feel like the first set here, the first mix, Warp Tapes Part 1, is a little bit songier. It's like got a lot of really catchy, like instantly memorable melodies. And it kind of like, I don't know how to put it. It's like, I guess in Part 2, basically, it kind of goes into even higher octane mode where we get a lot of just like pure percussive workouts with like almost no melodic hook. Do you kind of agree with that?
Yeah. I get what you're trying to say. Yeah, definitely. I think too, in the first one, it's like a little easier, as easy as it gets, to like sort of tell where like one song begins one ends, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. I just thought it was like worth noting that it's like, I want to describe the Warp Tapes as kind of incredibly catchy, but I feel like that is much more true of the first mix than the second mix, which has its catchy moments for sure. But really feels more of like a kind of club setting, like just pound, you know, it starts like pounding and like pummeling and, you know, gets in like firmly into rave territory, I think. Now, listener Joe wrote in to say, the sounds on the Warp Tapes are predictably amazing. You've mentioned that quote by either Sean or Rob about poor musicians in the 80s being stuck with old, cheap keyboards, but it's absolutely stunning the sound design and compositions they were able to squeeze out of them. I'm totally incompetent when it comes to synths, but I get the sense that even an expert in 80s keyboards listening to this mix would often be able to identify the gear they use for a certain song, but would have no idea how they were able to use it to make that particular sound. So what do you think about the sound design here? Is it mostly just cool retro vibes for you, or are you genuinely impressed with the sounds they've managed to create?
You know, I think it's pretty cool. You know, it definitely, like, you know, you can place it as being from, you know, the 90s or earlier, but I'm no expert either. You know, I dabble in synths or whatever, but it is like, I would really like to have a list of you know, like machines they used for this, because it would be like really interesting to see, you know, what they squeezed out of what and all. I think they do a pretty, especially with the synth sounds. I mean, you know, we talked about like, it definitely has like some acid feel to it and all, but I don't think it ever is just like, you know, generic acid synth sound, you know, one kind of thing, you know, it's always like a little Autechre-y.
I feel like, you know, so in the first set, for example, you know, I was kind of like writing down, you know, stuff that's, it's all quite recognizable, I think, for a while. And then around 16 minutes in, there's this, you know, part that starts that's, you know, just very catchy, kind of a blippy type of melody. And it's got like this kind of, I don't know, like almost like a throat singing kind of a like, oh, sounds like a vocal sample or something thing going on. And, you know, you just kind of like, it keeps kind of adding stuff. Like, you even get some stuff that sounds like a live drum kit, you know, probably sampled. They bring in, you know, some like movie dialogue sample at that time. I forget what he's saying. I wrote it down somewhere.
The Destroyer of Worlds thing?
Yeah, the Destroyer of Worlds.
Yeah, that's not from a movie. That's Robert Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I wonder.
He's talking about the first atomic bomb
detonation. I didn't know that that was like recorded, but I just wondered if like somebody was quoting him in a movie or something like that.
No, it's an interview with him, yeah. While we're on that, that sample sort of annoys me because like that is a very, very famous thing, and it's just sort of... It's like a little cheap, you know? It's like...
I mean, it's very, very old school. Like, it's just like so, you know, late 80s, early 90s thing to do. You know, at first they kind of use it as a transition, like from the track that I was just talking about, but then it starts to become looped into like the next track almost. I mean, I guess my point was just that, like, you know, and there's a lot of like acid gurgling and stuff on that track, a lot of like kind of, you know, ghostly synth pads that you would maybe like call sort of generic or like predictable or something like that. But you combine all that stuff together, like especially you add that kind of like weird throat singing thing to the mix. It's like, you know, that's like a moment where I'm kind of like just dazzled by the sound design, where it's just like, you know, maybe 80% of these sounds are not like in any way bizarre or shocking, you know, but like 20% of them are, you know, especially that little blippy melody is kind of like indescribable in a way. And that like weird throat singing thing. And you just kind of combine it all. And I'm like genuinely impressed with the sound design. I think like on part two, we get even more of that. Like we get quite noisy sections, quite industrial sections even. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of that as well on part one that like really has these kind of heavy clanging, almost like, you know, you want to say physically modeled, even though I don't think they were doing any kind of like digital synthesis here. But like they sound like...
Sounds like a sword fight.
Yeah. Stuff like that. And like, you know, there's like lots of clanging, like lots of, you know, just a big racket that almost gets like into tri-repete territory. It's obviously like way clubbier than anything you would hear on tri-repete. But it's like, I guess it's just a long-winded way to say like, they don't do it all the time, but the touches of like really striking sound design are sprinkled in all the right places for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you're right too when you say... You know, it's the combination that, especially when you're, I mean, you know, you gotta remember this is the 90s. There's probably no computer involved in any of this. Right. You know, and not only that, but I mean, they wouldn't have a lot of money, I'm sure, at this point. So, you know, that limits your equipment as well. And so it's that combination, you know, using those, you know, sort of preset sounds or whatever that you can't do much about, but then combining them in a way with things that you can do something about, you know, creates it's the, you know, the whole is greater than the parts or whatever.
Yeah. And they do this like throughout their whole career where they use like sounds that are kind of like, you know, traditional kind of acid bubbles and stuff like that. They do that all the time.
Or the 808 cowbell and Marhide.
Yeah, that for example. I mean, they use sounds that are not like shocking inherently, but they kind of lift everything up by, you know, either cushioning it in some kind of... They like weave it into some kind of like really new, interesting kind of fabric usually. And, you know, I think I was mentioning this last episode. We were talking about Oval Moon, I think. But like on some of their earlier records... You know, there's sometimes just one kind of interesting sound, but they make that kind of like the focal point of the track. And so all these traditional sounds end up sounding weirder than they actually are because the track is built around this thing. I feel like they genuinely do that a lot on the Warp tapes. You know, you can still tell that it sounds dated, but it's like, I don't know. I was genuinely just impressed by the level of sound design. Now, the other question is there a good variety of sounds here? I've seen a few complaints that it's a bit samey, you know, but on the other hand, listener Jordan had this to say, what I liked about these recordings was how repetitive they were. Some of the cuts here felt like they were going on forever, but the tracks are good enough to be that repetitive. Usually long AE tracks either have subtle changes that slowly unravel or deconstruct as they change to a completely new part different to the previous section, but these just go on because they know how good these jams are. So that's as much about the structures of the tracks as the sounds themselves. But what do you think about that take?
You know, it sort of depends on how you're listening to it. Because, you know, going through it so much, you know, over the past 2 weeks, you know, there were definitely periods that it began to feel like very repetitive and honestly wear me down a little bit. I mean, like today in final preparation, I listened to, both hours twice. And, you know, I mean, honestly, that got very, very tiring. But then again, you know, like when you just listen to like, I think it works way better if you listen to one and then the other, you know, like not together, like, you know, not back to back kind of thing. You know, it does, like, it sticks at the same tempo, almost the entire, you know, 2 hours. But then again, you know, I don't feel like these were necessarily like meant for deep listening at home, you know, in your headphones, kind of thing. It really does like feel like, a radio broadcast, which, you know, they released it, so that maybe defeats it a little bit. But, you know, if you just hear this in passing, you know, one time or so, you know, at the club or on these radio broadcasts, like, I don't think you're going to feel that repetitiveness or anything. Like, it's part of, you know, in the club, you want that. You know, you want the tempos to stay the same. You want, like, a similar beat. You know, that's how, you know, dancing keeps happening and stuff. And I feel like it's built for that. You know, I honestly feel like they probably release them in the store because they know crazy fans are just going to, you know, bootleg the stream and then you're going to be listening to, you know, a 192 rip. Might as well give them the wave, you know, and at least they're hearing it, you know. Sound nice, kind of thing. I think depends on the way you listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. It does work like kind of a live set that's meant to more like wash over you and sort of stay consistent throughout. But like paradoxically, I found that listening closely was the only way that I noticed kind of the wild diversity of sounds here, because it's like, I don't know. I even hesitate to call it repetitive in the way that like listener Jordan does, because I genuinely feel like I was saying earlier, it works in like an incunabula kind of way where like they keep adding new things. And like, there are so many moments where I'm like kind of blown away by how many interlocking parts they end up adding to the thing without like over cluttering it or anything. It feels like really by the end, like the kind of this complete picture, and you know, it gets to the point where like, I wouldn't take away anything. I don't know. You could say like they kind of reuse that kind of snare roll I was describing, like that kind of dancing snare thing. You know, they've reused that a lot. So there are things kind of tying it all together. But I don't know. I sort of felt like when I really focused in is when I noticed like these kind of subtle differences that are actually really, you know, really shocking. But across 2 hours with such limited equipment, you know, in regard to the structure of the tracks as well, there were some like really cool tricks, I thought. They didn't always do that kind of build up thing. Like on the second part in particular, there are a couple moments, in particular like the last kind of the last track there. I think it starts around like 53:30 is what I wrote down. You get like almost this track and then it changes and then it kind of returns to the, you know, it works like a jazz song, like with the head and then like the sort of solo section and then the end with the head again. And it was almost like a trick. Like, I didn't even realize we were in the same track until we went back. There were like other times where they would do weird things where it almost sounded like two different tracks cutting back and forth between them. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like I agree with you, but I also was impressed once I threw headphones on at the diversity of stuff, like sounds and structures going on.
I get that, you know, because you're definitely right. You know, if you don't pay attention, you know, you're not going to see those little subtle changes. I just felt like, I think it worked a lot better when I just had it on, you know, like the first week or so that I was listening to it.
Yeah.
But most of the time I just had it on at work, you know, just in the background. I'm listening, but I'm not, you know, tuned into every, you know, note that happens and stuff. And I enjoyed it a lot more than when I was listening to it, you know, back to back and really trying to, you know, dig deep into it. It just, I mean, I sort of had the same feeling with like the 2016, 2018, like AE live sets and stuff. It's just that thing that, I mean, it was, I think, built to be like temporal. And then when you take it out of that and you listen to it over and over and over again, you know, you've changed the context. So I don't think it's really like a, it's not really like a negative, you know, on their, you know, point. I think it's built for one purpose, and then when you do it in another purpose, you're sort of changing it.
Yeah, because I kind of wonder. I mean, maybe we can circle back around to this, but it's just like, it kind of, yeah, we'll save it because it's like kind of gets at the question of like, what is this?
Yeah, which yeah, is it like, does, definitely.
These are these demos meant to go on their debut album, you know, like, and they've just been mixed into like a live kind of mix, or were they always kind of designed to be club heavy tracks? We'll table that for now. But listener Ella also added, something else worth mentioning is that the audio quality is really good for what is essentially a compilation of jam tapes they decided to send to Warp. It shows that even at their earliest parts of their career, they've shown care for their work. Are you as impressed by the sound quality here as I am? Are the Warp tapes like evidence of their early kind of, you know, mixing and recording prowess?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like, one, it's like mixed and everything like so well. But also, like, what's odd to me is that it, like, you know, I assume these were like sitting on some tapes for since 1993 at the latest, and it doesn't like sound like that at all. And I caught myself, I was like, oh, well, maybe they just had them on their computer, you know, the files on their computer. And I was like, oh, wait, no, you wouldn't, in 89 to 93, like, you would have had it recorded on your computer. So I don't know, because even, you know, if Warp's like, oh, we got to take care of these, but like, Odd Tucker's not famous yet. Why would you be like, oh, I got to take care of these random demos? So it's like really like the sound quality, both in the mixing mastering and just how it's held up, really honestly makes me like a little suspicious a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of stunning to me. And there's like, you know, this, I don't know, there's like a part in particular, like around 12 minutes in the first part, where you get this kind of like blown out MIDI horn sound, and it's kind of like panning in this very disorienting way. Mm-hmm. And you get kind of this like weird muffled beat, and you know, the temptation is to say that like the track is an earlier one, like this is one of the 89 ones or something like that, because the tape just isn't as well preserved or something like that. But then you're like, well, maybe this was like a sound design choice.
Yeah, exactly.
It's working perfectly because these kind of blown out horn sounds are, it's like as if they're affecting and kind of distorting the rest of the track or something like that, which is like a very late Odd Tucker thing to do. But I don't know. I just found it funny because I was like so amazed at the quality of the recording that I was like, did they like get in and add new stuff at first? But then, you know, I just started thinking like, I don't know. I started even questioning like, maybe this sounds like kind of, this part sounds kind of lo-fi on purpose, you know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think, you know, since late Odd Tucker got so into this, like, you know, destruction of sounds and stuff, I think what you just said is right. You know, it's hard to tell what's a legitimate, you know, tape disintegration and what is just sound design choice, you know? I almost always thought it was a design choice just because it seems that way, but you know, until you bring it up, I don't know. You know, I almost like felt like, you know, the conspiracy theory guy, like, oh, maybe these are just like them screwing around making 90s beats and it's new or something.
And I
legitimately sort of thought that, but on the Discord I was like asking people if they knew some stuff about this tape and all, and somebody sent me like on We Are the Music Makers, you know, that forum, like somebody leaked like one of the songs from these tapes. I think it was in 2007 or something. It was a long time ago. And it like definitely existed. I don't know how that person had it, who they were or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, someone sent me a leaked, you know, thing from many years ago. I can't remember if it's 2007 or 2011, but it was definitely like over 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's interesting. But it just sounds incredible, honestly. And it sounds so good that it makes you think, when it does sound a little weird, that was a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always good choices, you know, just so happens to be. There's even like a part, I wrote down like around 41 minutes into part one. There's like this weird kind of, it's almost like a little breakdown transition thing where there's like kind of these like whines and squeaks going on, like, you know, almost like, I've said this before about other Odd Tucker tracks more recently, but like, you know, dragging a wet finger around like a crystal bowl, but or a crystal glass, but it sounds like kind of digitized and fucked up. And then it kind of returns in like perfect high fidelity later on. So I'm like, so that was definitely a choice, like the weird digitization, like tape artifact sound of that thing. You know, we talked about this a little bit already, but listener Ella calls it, quote, an extremely well-mixed and produced two-hour experience. But what do you think about the structure and flow here? You know, as with the sounds, I've seen occasional complaints like the one you kind of raised that it's a bit one tempo. But do you feel like each part kind of takes you on a satisfying journey all the way through?
Yeah, I mean, like I did say, like I do on one hand agree with the it's a little one tempo, often literally one tempo, you know, but I think it's just, and again, it, when we get to the discussion of like, what exactly is this, we, you know, we could dive deeper, but I think it's part of the experience. I think they purposely mix it this way to be a, you know, a live club kind of piece, and you wouldn't want, you know, you wouldn't want shifting tempos and stuff in that context. Right. So I think it does, in like, I think it takes you on a satisfying journey. Like you know, I don't want people to think I'm being like, you know, contradicting what I was saying earlier. I think like their journey is just one that requires that sort of same tempo.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like part one is a little bit, like, honestly, in a good way, but it's a little bit just back and forth. Like, it's kind of like these kind of lush, like, melodic earworms and like kind of dreamy, like almost psychedelic parts, even though like it's still really high octane, like really high BPM. And then it'll kind of shift into like pure rhythmic, like rave ups, you know, mm-hmm. And then it'll kind of shift back and it just kind of goes back and forth, but then it ends on like a really great crescendo, I think. And you kind of get this, like, I don't know, it feels like it's built and built and built. And then you get like this big, like low and heavy kind of synth lead joins, and it's like playing like almost halftime of what you thought the like beat was, you know, and it kind of like slows things down into this cosmic goo in like such a satisfying way. The second part though, I feel like it really just like, it almost just keeps building and building and building. It's got like a lot more of these like wild borderline industrial kind of rhythmic workouts, but it just feels like the energy keeps increasing all the way to the end with like very few kind of mellow outs. And you know, so the tempo stays the same all the time, but I feel very, like, by the end of it, I feel like I want to feel at the end of a live show, like I am worn out, I went a wild journey with them. So I feel like that works perfectly. And so on that note, I was going to ask you, even though you kind of already answered it, if you think of it as like two separate mixes or one, you know, two-hour experience, as listener Ella said, I mean, I really think both, you know, it's important to remember that the first one was played, I think, on the first day of Warp 30, and the other one, like, closed the last day of Warp 30. So there was some time between them. I feel like they work separately, like really as well structured sets.
Oh yeah, definitely. I really enjoy it a lot more listening to them but separately. You know, yeah. Like I spent a few days, like earlier this week, like, you know, this day I'm only gonna listen to part one, you know, the next day I'd only listen to part two. Right. And I enjoyed those days, you know, yeah, much more than trying to listen to them both, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So more from listener Ella, who says, when I listen to the Warp tapes and their other early work, I like to imagine being in a desolate space station or a ship in zero G, exploring all the cosmos has to offer. It really has a sci-fi feel to it. I know we're usually like hesitant to you know, draw our own thematic interpretations, as much as we like reading them from listeners, but do you have any thoughts on kind of like the mood, the vibe, imagery that comes to mind? Because it's almost like all I can think about is like a club in 1991, you know, in the UK or something. Like, I think of old synths and like dirty hardware and, you know, I don't know, but do you get spaceships, anything like that?
You know, I think the listener's not far off with the, you know, spaceship thing. The set two, like, starts that vocal like sample that's, it's kind of buried, but it's like chatter from one of the Mercury launches from the early 60s. You know, so it's definitely, I mean, I think, you know, it's on their mind there. But I think, you know, I'm not as creative as most of our listeners with those. I tend to go the way you go and think much more literally about it with you know, the clubs in the 90s and in England and stuff, you know. That's sort of the vibe I got as well.
Yeah, I appreciate it, but I just, like, all I can think about is like, if I was born, you know, a lot earlier, having the best night of my life.
Yeah, exactly.
In a club in 1991 or something like that. All right, I know it's not super easy to single out moments from two like continuous mixes of untitled music, but Are there any moments that really stand out to you? I should note that listener Ella wrote in to say, I can't exactly give track highlights because everything is condensed together, but the melody on the very first track is an absolute earworm, and I haven't gotten it out of my head ever since I first heard it. So what are your favorite parts here?
Well, first off, I definitely agree with the listener. I've had that like melody stuck in my head all day. I think we already sort of touched on it, but in the second mix, I really love that like sword fighting section where it reminds me of like, you know, the little clips in like Wu-Tang, like the, it's always like, you know, someone pulling a sword out, you know, before the thing. It's like that, but it like continues for quite a while. I really like that weird throat singing, you know, section.
Yeah.
On the first one, of course, I enjoy the Mercury sample. On the second one, those are probably. I think the sword fight thing is my favorite. You know, sound design in it. I don't know how you would make that with such a, you know, early synths and stuff.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I think that like the 16 minutes into the first part is a big fan favorite, that part with like the weird throat singing thing, and like really, I mean, it just gets like breathtakingly lush by the end with like the amount of layers that are on that thing. It's probably my favorite part of the whole 2 hours, but you know, overall I kind of found myself like gravitating toward those more lush moments. You know, there's like a part in the I don't know, in the second part where it's like, what did I write down? 23 and a half minutes in, where, you know, it's been like quite an aggressive kind of rhythmic workout for most of this piece so far. And we just kind of get like this interesting, like, you know, you get these kind of those ghostly synths, and you get like these kind of light little, like, I don't know, beaming synth notes at the end of each bar. Like sometimes just two notes, sometimes like, you know, just two or three notes, as if they're kind of being played or something like that. And you get some like kind of back and forth loop that's got like a lot of wah-wah on it. And it just gets like very psychedelic and like very, I don't know, it just gets very grand and epic. I just kind of love overall in this, especially that second set, how it can go from like pure rave up to like something that just feels very, very epic, very grand. Trying to remember, it's not that easy again. Love the, there's like a part, 34 minutes into part one, where it's like a lot of stuttering, kind of glitchy noises, like this stuttering wall of sounds and stuff, and this really incredible, like kind of bendy synth motif over the top that, I don't know, it just like cuts through the kind of stuttering, like glitchiness of the whole rest of the thing, and just like makes it very smooth and lush all of a sudden. Definitely my favorite parts. Are there any parts that you don't care for, that you find yourself kind of like losing focus?
I mean, I mentioned it a little bit, but that Oppenheimer sample bothers me a little bit. I've complained every time there's a vocal sample. Yeah. I complain basically, but it's just, and I think you said, you know, it was just sort of a 90s thing to do. And I get that. It's just, I hate when someone uses like a sample that is famous. It takes you out of it, you know? I wish they had been like something you didn't know. But I do, the vocal sample I do like at the end of the first one, they're like, cheers, mate. I love that one.
Yeah, I was curious what you think. I guess I just wasn't as familiar with the Oppenheimer, you know, interview or anything to like be that bothered. But yeah, that, I mean, that sounds like that's where like the date really shows up, I think, there. You know, I'll say that part two, there's like basically the last 20 minutes, and it's probably true of part two as a whole, it was much harder to kind of jot down, you know, where tracks were changing.
Yeah.
And like I said, they would do that trick where it's like it would change, but then you would realize that was just kind of like a weird interlude thing, and it went back, you know, to what it originally was. So I was like constantly writing down, okay, new track at 40 minutes, scratch that out, that's not a new track, you know. And it gets like a little bit, I mean, it gets like very into the territory of like early, you know, Mike Paradinas, like a Tango Invective kind of era, like with like really distorted, like kind of snares and toms and like hi-hats just like shuffling at like such a high BPM, you know. And I don't know, it's almost like 20 minutes of like just abrasive. I mean, they keep putting little nice little touches, like little kalimba type melodies and stuff, and always kind of keep me. But there's like a section where I'm like, damn, man, that, like, if I was in a club, I'd love it, but I'm getting a little tired out.
yeah, I get that.
So I would say, like, I can almost firmly say that I prefer part one. I mean, part two has like much longer tracks, I think. And again, not super clear where things are starting and stopping on part two all the time, but there are definitely some like 8 minute type of, you know, tracks that really have space there. You know, I like that more in general than on part one, how like every track is pretty much 4 minutes. Like it's like pretty strict how it keeps shifting and it shifts really clearly. But I'll just say like the pieces on part one, I much prefer to part two. Which part do you prefer?
I think I also prefer part one, basically for the same thing. I think two, just like it's certain things like stick around a little too long. That's the one that feels more one tempo and stuff to me.
Yeah.
Not to throw you for a loop, but do you happen to have the Rate Your Music open? Which one's higher rated on there? You know, track wise.
Let me find it.
Talk amongst yourselves for a minute.
Let me vamp for a minute while I figure out what this would be categorized as.
Oh, it's under compilations. I have it open, but I am too cheap to pay for Rate Your Music, so I can't see. Oh, no, it's under DJ mixes. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, after all that, they're tied. So.
Oh, well, good. Glad we took that aside.
What a letdown that was.
That really was.
They're both tied at 4.0, so they're both bolded, which is fitting, I think.
Nice.
But okay, let's start zooming out and talking about the Warp Tapes' place in Autechre's body of work a little bit. Listener Ella called it the very best of their pre-Incunabula era, which kind of makes me think that they still prefer Incunabula. But what do you think? Is this the same quality as Incunabula? Maybe a step back and closer to Lego Fee Cavity Job era or what?
I think it's a step back from Incunabula. I love Incunabula a lot. I think it's a much better like record, but then again, I don't know that this is supposed to be a record. I think it's definitely closer to Lego Feet. It makes Cavity Job like even stranger. We talked about it when we covered it, but Cavity Job just seems like very amateur and. If it didn't have the Autechre name, assigned to it, like no one would care about it whatsoever.
It was like very typical of that.
Yeah, it doesn't feel special at all. Like it honestly just feels like just somebody, you know, that's decent with synthesizers messing around or something. So it's really strange where that fits in. I think it's definitely better than Cavity Job. I think it's maybe on par with Lego Feet, definitely a step down from Incunabula.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that, you know, I haven't really listened to Lego Feet since we talked about it on our first episode. So that was a while ago. But I remember Lego Feet being quite scattered in nature. Like, it had a very, like, it kind of worked well for it, but it had this kind of like, this idea was just a minute long, you know, whereas this idea was 3 minutes long. And there were like really, there was kind of like a stop start thing going on where like it sometimes wouldn't even try to flow right in. It was just kind of like this weird sketch into this weird sketch. You know, you'd get like kind of a sustained like chord that would just be the transition between the two. And it had just this kind of cool, like, you know, you call it postmodern if you really wanted to read into it, but just like this kind of fractured quality to it. This, I mean, is like tightly pieced together. And, you know, so in that respect, it feels like more accomplished than Lego Feet. You know what I mean? Like Lego Feet just feels kind of like this portfolio of ideas, whereas this feels like a very cohesive kind of like structured two pieces, you know?
Yeah.
And there were points, I swear to God, where I felt like, well, this, you know, like points, I want to stress, where I was like, this is every bit as good as some of the stuff on Incunabula. You know, like maybe it never reached the heights of Incunabula, but like the, you know what I mean, the deep cuts on Incunabula?
Yeah, I can,
they're like,
I can agree with that.
There were points where it was like every bit as good as that. And every bit is, you know, like I said, creative and sort of surprising with the sound design even. But other parts where, you know, it sounded a lot more dated. You know, the thing is that, because it's like a live thing, you know, it just feels like, I don't know, not as inventive as, you know, as when they get into kind of the IDM era, let's say, right? When they get into the artificial intelligence thing, they get into the home listening thing, you know, it's like, this feels like so club ready that it's just like, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to ask is like, is that unfair? You know, I think we talked about this even on our very first episode, but it's like, is it unfair that I kind of privilege the home listening, like the deep listening experience over the kind of more fun, you know, bodily type of music? You know what I'm saying?
I completely understand what you're saying, but I do the same thing. You know, I mean, all my complaints about this are, you know, the bodily aspect of it. And I mean, I think that's definitely why I prefer Incunabula, because it's got a good mix of those two things. You know, there's definitely like danceable tracks on it, moments, you know, whatever. But it's also like a very nice record to listen to at home, where like this, you know, this is definitely like more in that live realm. So, I mean, yeah, it's probably unfair to judge it that way, you know, when you're just listening to it at home. But also, I mean, they did release it, so, you know, they open it up
like,
to that.
The only reason I want to say I feel like it's a step back from Incunabula is because it is like a dance record, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe that's not fair, but it's just like, the BPM is so high, it's so high octane that it just doesn't feel like quite as serious, you know, and like artistically accomplished or something as Incunabula. And that's probably bullshit and would probably make some people angry. But sort of on that note, listener Jordan wrote, I think the jump from these groovy beats to the music of Incunabula is down to the Artificial Intelligence series, a series made by Warp to exhibit the depths of where electronic music can go. And I think a light bulb went off in Rob and Sean's heads, and they thought, this is where we go now. The idea of post-rave electronic music, not just for the body, but for the brain, that clicked with them both. I think they revisit this earlier fun style of music in Untilted after exhausting their creativity with electronic music. So what do you think about that? Was it kind of like a, you know, it's just such an interesting, we can't confirm this, but like you said earlier, it's like the theory I kind of like is that maybe even Warp picked those tracks from tapes that these tracks were on, you know, for Incunabula, maybe even for, you know, the Artificial Intelligence compilations. And it's like, why is the character so different of those tracks then?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's one of those questions we'll probably never answer. But I mean, it does seem like the listener is kind of correct. You know, if this is, you know, from literally like just from tapes they sent to, you know, Warp to get signed or whatever, it makes sense that they would like then they would like then after joining Warp and, you know, meeting other artists and working, you know, around other people, you know, would take stuff from that, which, you know, leads like Incunabula, obviously, like I think is closer to the Artificial Intelligence series and stuff than this. But also maybe it's just those tapes contained both, and you know, for this fun mix they picked the fun parts, and for Incunabula, you know, Warp picked the, you know, more cerebral, you know, listen at home kind of thing, since it was a listen at home record.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it's very mysterious. I agree 100% with listener Jordan that, say what you want about the term IDM and artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. and all this stuff, but like I genuinely feel like Autechre were kind of inspired by that moment and sort of chased it. Like I really feel like they were like, oh yeah, you know, we've been doing club stuff, but what we should work on is like the kind of cerebral, like home listening stuff. And that was what kind of led to them going deeper and deeper till this day into that kind of realm. Not that they don't play with the body. And I totally agree that Untilted is that kind of like a record, or a return to the celebration, mm-hmm. of the music that's on this record, Warp Tapes. And a lot of that, you know, you get a lot of that kind of acid squelching and stuff, a lot of familiar, like even those like weird marching band snare rolls where the snares are like really harsh and kind of distorted. You get a lot of that on Untilted. You get all that stuff. This is almost like the key to understanding Untilted, I think. But, you know, it's just weird because I feel like it would be hard on this tape. And maybe there's a bunch more, right? Because if the tapes depicted on the cover of this release are real or whatever, they all contain a lot more music. Maybe there is a lot of other slower, moodier stuff that wouldn't work on this mix. But it's like, I have a hard time finding any part of either of these mixes that feels like it would fit on the Artificial Intelligence series. You know, it's way too high BPM. It's way too danceable.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And also, you know, Cavity Job and Lego Feet, like those releases make me think that, you know, the way the listener is, that, you know, it's like all most of the evidence that we have like points to the sort of change of style with Inky Narita. But again,
yeah.
I mean, if all these tapes, you know, on the cover here, you know, how long can a tape be? 120 minutes, I think. You know, you got 2 hours times, you know, however many tapes are on here. There could be anything.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, let's say this did come out in 93. Do you think it would stand out from the music of that era? Would it have been a classic on the level of like Orbital, Selected Ambient Works, the first artificial intelligence compilation even? What do you think?
You know, it's hard to say. I want to say yes, but I wonder if that's just like me being, you know, either one, like an Autech or Stan, or just being like, well, you know, you see what they become or something,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's sort of hard for me to say. Like, I want to say yes, but I it's not a confident yes, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I mean, this would obviously be a controversial statement, but I feel like all the stuff, like, pre-Selected Ambient Works, let's say, this is as good as any of the best of that stuff. You know, that kind of, like, pre-IDM, pre-warp electronic music. This is, to me, just as good. And I feel like if it came out then, it would be, you know, probably seen as like sort of a classic along those lines, you know, although it would probably need to be divided into tracks and stuff like that for bother with it. You know, it's super interesting thing about, and this might even be off topic, but like think about Aphex Twin Selected Ambient Works, right? Where that was like such a watershed moment. And it's so weird because, you know, I don't know if it's a, if they're doing a little nod or what, like probably not, but it's just like the fact that Selected Ambient Works has that little subtitle, right? It's like 85 to 92, which is so funny because it's like the Aphex Twin's record sort of sells itself as like an archival thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just called Selected Ambient Works of 85 to 92. And it has this kind of like lo-fi sound, which is not, you know, like the, at least the recording quality is not state of the art for the time. And it really has this quality of like, these are like weird lost buried gems or something, but you hear it and like the tracks themselves are so forward looking. Like, I really think they invent, you know, modern electronic music all right there. And also I think he's full of shit that anything on there came from 1985.
Yeah, like, me too.
But it's funny because like the Warp Tapes also sort of sells itself as an archival thing. And it actually is an archival thing in this case. But it's just like, I don't even know how to, you know, I was just sort of thinking about like the funny, I don't even have like a good point to make, but I was just thinking about like the weird, funny coincidence of that. And I was just like sort of imagining like a, let's say 1992 or a 1993, where you get both Selected Ambient Works and, you know, you get Selected Ambient Works 85 to 92 and Warp Tapes 89 to 93. I can't help but say that Aphex Twins sounds still way, like way more forward looking than this somehow.
Yeah, definitely. I also don't believe, you know, the dates that much on Aphex's, but I mean, definitely. I mean, without, I don't think that's controversial to say at all. You know, I think that there's a reason that's a classic. And I think it, you know, it would remain so whether or not this came out or not.
Yeah. So I guess I can just definitively say that it would still have been blown out of the water by Selected Ambient Works one. I don't think that's like a super controversial thing to say. But weirdly, listening to this, I kind of felt like if it came out at that time, it would be like, how do I put this? You know, there's some records that they kind of come out and instead of like being this trailblazing thing, they just seem to like top the era. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like My Bloody Valentine's Loveless. Like, it feels like a late record, you know, because it still kind of sounds like the 80s, but it just like nails it so hard that people had no choice but to move on or something like that. Or like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, it becomes like the capstone of a you know, a scene or a genre.
Yeah, like a capstone. And even if it's not like that kind of a like level of masterpiece, like I know we disagree about like the Flaming Lips, right? But like the Soft Bulletin or something that comes out in like 99, I think, and it's just like, it feels like very 90s, but it was like, it's like this graceful ending to the 90s. It doesn't predict what was to come in the 2000s, but it's like this really kind of classic. I feel like if this came out in the early 90s, it would be like that. It just like so perfectly like encapsulates the era without really making a big jump forward.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, like I can imagine a world where, you know, Autechre only releases this or something, and it becomes, you know, that sort of loveless kind of, you know,
yeah,
you know, thing. I could definitely see that.
It would be like I could see it as the definitive pre-warp electronic album almost. Yeah. Like, I feel like that's
pre-Saw, you know, record. Yeah, I could definitely.
Yeah. So, based on that, since we both seem to like hold it in pretty high esteem, I've seen complaints that like this is just Incunabula or Lego Feet leftovers. You know, I did want to note that listener Jordan wrote, I think I heard some of the Lego Feet tracks in there, and I've seen similar claims from people like smarter than me or with more time on their hands, like saying, you know, oh, this, you can hear it here and you can hear a little snippet of it here, whatever. This sounds like a slight remix of this. But you don't feel that way, do you? That this is like just like the leftovers, we had already heard the best stuff?
No. I mean, again, maybe there are some Lego Feet things hidden in there. I can't remember where I saw it, but somebody claimed there's like some snippets of a Bass Cadet or something. I honestly, I don't hear any of that stuff. But like you said, I don't have the time or musical know-how to you know, maybe catch all that. But yeah, I don't think this sounds like Incunabula much at all. You know, Lego Feet a little closer, but I think, like you said, you know, Lego Feet is more of like, you know, this is the idea, move on to the next thing sort of thing.
Yeah,
I get sort of a totally different, or maybe not totally different, but at least a pretty different vibe, you know, between all those things.
Yeah, so I want to ask kind of like an open-ended question. How do you think listening to this in 2019 or say 2021, you know, how does that affect the way you hear the Warp tapes? Or do you think, I mean, because nobody heard this until, mm-hmm. you know, 30 years later. So it's like, how does that change the way you think that we approach this thing?
I mean, I think the obvious thing is that you're doing things like trying to hear if you hear any Lego Feet in there or any Incunabula. Yeah. You know, you've always like, you're always looking. It's weird to look at like what is essentially like an artist's first creations, like through the lens of everything they've done, you know, since, especially someone like Autechre that's like, one, been around so long, two, released so many records, and like three, and most importantly, like gone through so many different changes. You know, it's like you just constantly, I mean, we've done it this entire episode, you're just constantly like looking like, oh, is there any hint at Elsec in here? You know, do you see that? I mean, we've this whole, not only this episode, but this whole podcast, we always, you know, try to avoid doing that at first because, you know, trying to avoid like looking at everything through that lens of today. And I think like something like this, it's especially hard because, you know, you can listen to Tri-Repete and forget about, you know, Elsec or something. Cause you know, there was a time I only had heard Tri-Repete or something, but this, like, literally almost anyone who's listened to this has heard, you know, at least every, you know, main Autechre record, except for Sign and Plus at this point, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely true. It's like, you almost can't help but search for little indications of what's to come. You know, you'll never have the chance to just experience it on its own terms. The other thing that's kind of funny is like, I feel like some of these sounds, like some of the more dated sounds, let's say, they kind of passed through sounding old to like sounding vintage, you know, that like kind of moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounding old sounds vintage, sounds cool. You know, by 2019, I think we had firmly reached that point with these sounds. I feel like if this came out in like 2001, it would have been
corny.
Really would have sounded like shit, I think. But like somehow they like, I don't know, maybe wisely held on to it long enough to where it now just sounds very classic. It just sounds like very, you know, I've talked about it before, but there's just something so like warm and comforting about the sheer sound of this thing. Even though, again, I feel like they are kind of pushing it in interesting directions a lot of the time, but you know, so it's like become familiar and comforting, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Which is probably like a very, very different experience than when they delivered it to Warp in the first place. It wasn't supposed to sound, you know,
no, yeah, I mean,
and familiar.
Exactly. And that's another reason why you can never really like experience it, you know, that way.
Well, listener Jordan shared this interesting comment. The sounds they use are obviously less crafted and more generic than they would do later, but even in these earlier recordings, you can hear the detail of the instruments they were working with, like how they had an LFO modulate the filter of the hi-hats. These are subtle changes, but it's because they're so subtle that you can tell that even in the beginning, they were trying to maximize the sound of the things they had and wanted people to listen close closely to something that would only have been thought of as simple, danceable hip-hop beats. Their use of 16th note hi-hats were also something different here. In these early recordings and Incunabula, these hi-hats seemed to be used to just fill the gap, and they were just basic standard sounds. In later releases, they used the hi-hat much differently in the form of an occasional glitchy stab to add color to the music. There are many differences, but there are some points that sound like modern Autechre. One point where I felt this was at the last 10 minutes before the last track on the first part. If you replace the hi-hats and cymbals with pads and some glitches, it would sound like modern AE. Did you ever have that feeling? Like, you know, we were just talking about sort of the warm vintage quality of the sounds. Did you ever feel like if the track had maybe some more modern sounds, it could totally fit in with, you know, even maybe even like 2010s Autechre?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, I think like what the listener said about like, you know, using the LFO to modulate the hi-hats and stuff, and using like maximizing what little sounds they had, you know, I think that, you know, that really, you know, foretells what becomes with Autechre. You know, obviously like with computers and Maximus P and stuff, like their palette opens up, you know, so much wider and all. But yeah, I mean, you know, if perhaps they had that palette and that, you know, technology in making these, yeah, maybe they wouldn't have just used, you know, whatever standard hi-hat noise. It would have been some, you know, stabby, glitchy, you know, generated sound kind of thing. It's one of those things, you know, you can never know.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I think in principle, I agree, which is like, there are moments where if you just sort of replaced a sound with something designed in Max MSP or something, like, mm-hmm. the whole track I think would suddenly become a much more like a much weirder, more wilder thing. And you know, there are moments where they're using, you know, there's like a moment, I'm trying to see where I wrote it, it was like around 20 minutes in the second part where it's like it has that kind of sound of like, you know, when you're like using a mixer to just sort of generate feedback and you're kind of like twisting it, so yeah. It's like shifting in pitch and stuff. Like, sounds like they're doing that, but they're actually like chopping it into like quite interesting melodies and patterns and stuff, but it has that kind of like squealing feedback kind of sound. You know, it's just a moment where it's like I can actually hear like quite clearly what they were after, but I just know what a mixer feeding back sounds like, you know what I mean? So I immediately place it, but I can just totally imagine modern AE being like, I want some like something squealing and like wild and out of control, and then it getting chopped into some weird pattern. I can like 100% imagine them doing that. And if they had better technology, I could almost imagine that moment fitting on LSEC or something like that. You know, there are also parts where it's like, you know, I mentioned this earlier, but like, Untilted feels like this, but like almost one with the mastery that they had acquired by 2005, but also like kind of exaggerated to become even more like manic and wild. But like there are some tracks here that I feel like they could be the demo for an Untilted track.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with all that. Yeah, like the mixer thing is a good point. You know, now they have more tools, like they can make that sound. But yeah, I mean, I think that if this truly is between 89 and 93, you know, that's a pretty innovative way to like make a sound that isn't common, isn't in, you know, isn't a standard issue on you know, some early 90s synth.
Right. Well, let's get into this. We kind of like shift toward the ending here. Get into that. What is this question? Starting with an email from listener Joe, who writes, "The question of what this release actually is not so simple. The cover art teases us with no less than 9 separate cassette tapes, indicating that what we're hearing is a carefully selected mix from a much larger collection of music that will almost certainly never be released. The million-dollar question is, to what extent has the original music been modified? Another quote you've brought up many times is the one about how they would have a hard time releasing soundboards since they would always want to tweak the music afterwards. Can we trust that they haven't done any tweaking here? If they have, does it even matter? This is far from an archival museum-esque bootleg a la the Dylan bootleg series, and is constructed in a very well thought out and musical way." Joe continues, "If I had to guess, I'd say that they most likely took a lot of different elements and ideas they liked best from the different demos on the different tapes and constructed a wholly new thing, not quite to the same extent as Girl Talk or Since I Left You, but more like a very intense DJ mix. In fact, I don't think it's far off to guess that they took the same approach that they did to the promotional mega long DJ sets for their early 2010s albums and did it with their own music instead. The music is so seamless and there's so many ideas that interlock perfectly together that I can't imagine that any individual tape sounds like this." So what do you think definitively? Is this a new 2019 mix of old material? How much tweaking, maybe even adding, do you think they did?
I think it's definitely a new mix of old material. You know, they don't call it Warp Tape, you know, 89. I think they imply, you know, with all the pictures and the title that, you know, yeah, it's from multiple tapes. I don't think that, like, back then they, you know, were making just these two,
yeah,
1 hour long, you know, like such, so cohesive, like, things, you know. I think it probably was in tracks, and I, you know, I think here, you know, they've mixed them. As for the tweaking, I don't know. I would say, like, I think they've done some tweaking to make it flow and stuff, but also, like, you know, it's hard to think about it with the technology. You know, it would be easy, you know, if you recorded a bunch of stuff now, you could just take the stems of it and you could mix it all down. But right, if these are just right on regular cassette tapes, you know, all you've got is left and right, you know, is your stereo. That's it. You know, you can't really break it down that much. So I don't know how much tweaking can be done, you know, more from a technological standpoint, but also, I'm no pro.
Yeah, there are parts where I'm, like, tempted to ponder whether they have layered stuff on top of each other to make, like, quite a complex, you know, kind of track or moment or something like that.
Yeah.
But it just sounds, I don't know, it just sounds like, I guess the weird thing is that it sounds like the transitions, they make it sound easy, you know, which probably is to their credit, but it's like, you're never feeling like, oh, wow, that's definitely Autechre in 2019, you know,
made 100%.
This transition, because it's like, it's pretty simple. I mean, it just, like, but it just never, like, cuts up. It's almost like functional, you know what I mean? Like, a good DJ would be like, I'm not trying to, like, dazzle you with my transitions. I'm just trying to keep the energy mm-hmm. moving in the direction that I want it to. And it just kind of does that, like, with perfection. So it's like, you know, I could almost imagine this mix being made at that time, but I guess I agree with listener Joe that I kind of believe them that it's like actually a mix of all the tapes. The other thing about that that's weird though is, like, I mean, I know it's like Warp's 30th anniversary and I guess it's a big deal and everything, but can you imagine asking Autechre to sit through like tens of hours of demo material and find their favorite stuff and make a mix of, does that even seem like something they would, like, have time to do?
Yeah, honestly, they seem like maybe, it seems like maybe even Warp was just like, hey, you know, if you could put something together, that'd be cool. And they're like, here's 2 hours of these, you know, intensively mixed, you know, perfection kind of things. They sort of seem like those kind of people, honestly.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's just almost insane. I mean, I do wonder so much what else is on those tapes, but it's like, this really has the sound of, like, they pick the absolute best track for, you know, to follow the previous one every single time. And it's like, the amount of digging they must have done through these tapes is, like, unbelievable. The amount of work, it seems like, went into this. Listener Joe also shared this intriguing comment saying, one fun thought, you could technically consider them NTS sessions 5A and 5B, since they are chunks of music originally sequenced specifically for broadcasts on 1 hour NTS radio slots. In fact, I wonder if this might have been the original idea for the NTS sessions before they instead decided to go with more recent material and they saved it for the Warp 30 celebration instead. I don't, you know, think that that's the case. I do feel like NTS asked them to do, like, a residency, mm-hmm. but it is kind of funny how it's like, I mean, what they did with the NTS sessions must not be very different from what they did with, you know, the Warp tapes, because it's like they pretty much went through stuff that they had. And I do believe that on NTS, they, you know, developed some new stuff and probably worked with stuff a lot more, but they basically just went through their backlog and made, like, perfect mixes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, of course, to their credit, but yeah, obviously, you know, the new ones, it's easier to tweak, again, technology-wise, you know, with stems and having the pieces, you know, probably loaded in their gear and everything. I think it would be more of NTS, you know, the prequels, this, you know, yeah. I wouldn't think of it as 5A and B or anything, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely impressive. You know, the Autechre, they're so good at, you know, so many different things like their mixability, you know, just I kind of get, it kind of gets looked over, I think.
I know. I mean, I would assume that they, like, did the NTS sessions before doing this, but I feel like they got a lot of good practice on the NTS sessions, how to make not just, like, you know, mixes for these live broadcasts. Obviously, they've done lots of DJ mixes in their lives and other broadcasts and stuff, but it's like, I don't know. There's just something so funny about how, like, the NTS sessions are perfectly 2 hours and these are perfectly 1 hour and they don't feel cut off early. They don't feel stretched out too far. Like, it's just like, they've gotten so fucking good.
It seems so natural, yeah.
I know, just doing a perfect broadcast. It's like, unbelievable. But I guess you would get pretty good after doing the NTS sessions. So earlier, I read listener Joe's theory that the sheer amount of Autechre material out there sort of dampened the impact of the warp tapes. But I think we've also got to acknowledge the free and super inconspicuous, as you mentioned, release. You know, that download link on the AE store is seriously almost hidden. Listener Ella wrote, it was really a really cool move for them to upload it in high quality for free on their website, unlike some artists, Cough, Societus X Tape, Cough. that's Boards of Canada's Warp 30 performance, who participated in Warp 30. Listener Joe also wrote, one last interesting thing to me is that they did not charge any money for the files after the broadcast, even though they probably could have made a decent amount of money as they did with AE Live. It seems like this release is meant to be in the vein of the Electron Settings files that they put out earlier, and it's supposed to be a low profile treat for the most obsessive fans. So how do you think the method of release affected the way we hear this record? You know, like, would it be a much bigger deal if it was an official release, like, which costs money, was maybe even divided into tracks, or is it not really even good enough to justify that and works best as a one-time broadcast plus a fan-only freebie?
I mean, I think it's definitely, like, good enough. You know, if they sold this, you know, a la the Dylan bootleg series kind of thing, you know, I think people would definitely, you know, buy it, pay for it, and not be mad about it or anything. I've wondered if maybe it's free because maybe there's some samples in there that aren't cleared. You know, that website's like whosampled.com.
Yeah.
I like looked up and it claims that there's like a Beastie Boys sample on this.
Interesting.
I mean, that website, you know, just people fill it out. So it could be wrong, but, and I couldn't like piece it together. You know, I couldn't really pick out, oh, you know, that's the Beastie Boys. But I mean, if it's got stuff like that in there, you can't sell it, you know. So maybe it's that. I think it's either that or, you know, like I said earlier, you know, they probably put it on here because they know obsessive fans are gonna just bootleg it, and they seem so like concerned about, you know, quality and stuff, that it's like, you know, might as well listen to it in good quality. You know, kind of thing. I do wish that, I mean, I wish that Societus Day, I still have the bootleg of that, you know, saved on my phone and stuff. I don't know. It is strange. I mean, cause even if they're just going to give it away for free on the website, it is weird how it's like those Electron files.
So little fanfare, because it's like, I really feel like it is so honestly good and like kind of shockingly good. Like I said earlier, I feel like it's like almost like the definitive, like, you're an Autechre fan, you've always wanted to hear early Autechre, you know, Lego Feet isn't exactly the right thing. It's like, you know, a little bit of a different beast because it is kind of the sketchbook quality, but like, this is now the definitive, like, pre-Incunabula Autechre release. And it's like, you know, I mean, I feel like there's kind of no excuse why it doesn't have more listeners and like more attention. But if they like kind of released it like with any fanfare at all, if they put it like even for free, but they put it like up.
Yeah, I mean, just know, have a description with a big banner and stuff. Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
Maybe even like divide it into tracks or something. Like, I mean, that would probably help a lot. But it's like, I feel like it would be like a big deal. It would be like, you know, the kind of thing it would get like a the best new reissue on Pitchfork, and a bunch of new fans would find it, and everybody would be nostalging out about like this warm vintage sound from the early 90s, and it would be like considered this classic, this lost classic or something of that period. I mean, I don't know, but it's also possible that like Autechre doesn't see it that way, that they see it as just kind of like a fun one-off, and they didn't want to put so much pressure on it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it is sort of like a, you know, a shyness or something. I mean, even we've talked about it. Like, we've read, you know, interviews and stuff where they don't like, you know, which one they called Incunabula corny and stuff, you know? Like, I'm sure if they think that those records are corny, I'm sure they probably think there's some level of that here. And so maybe, yeah, they just want it like, you know, the fan, you know, the big fans will like it. They won't care if it's, you know, they'll understand the vintageness of it. Whereas if you release it and it gets best new reissue and stuff, you're going to get people who aren't Autechre fans checking it out. And maybe, you know, Maybe they just don't want that sort of attention on it. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's the kind of thing we'll never know. But it is strange, because I think you're right. You know, if this had been released, you know, with even free, but with some more fanfare, it definitely. I mean, in looking for reviews for this, you know, to read, there's only that little snippet you read from The Wire. You know, nobody else really seems to know, you know, big publication or anything like seemed to have even touched on it.
Yeah, I just feel like, I don't know. I mean, probably some of this stuff exists. In fact, I feel like there's a Mike Paradinas like release or series of releases. It's like kind of, it's not like mixed together, but it's just kind of like early from the vaults type stuff. But it's like, I just think of like some of these like electronic music juggernauts. If they put out, you know, imagine if like Aphex Twin was like, and I know he kind of pretended to already do this, but if he was like, okay, here's like a cool mix I made from the very best of like my early demo tapes and stuff, it would be like a sensation. It would be huge, you know? And I feel like this could have been huge if they put a bigger deal on it. It seems like they just didn't want to. And I feel like that's kind of a shame. The other thing, you know, I wanted to mention is I do think Joe's theory, it also explains part of the like sort of overlooked quality of this, which is just that there is so much Autechre out there that it's not like something that fans feel like they need, you know, that they're going to like really grab onto the way they would with like Boards of Canada's like old tunes or something like that. I feel like that's also a good theory.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that too. I mean, it's proof even with that Societas tape. Like I feel like I hear a lot about that even though that's not even original music on that, you know, it's a DJ mix, but still it still got like a lot of attention, you know, just because of that. I you're right. You know, if you're a casual Autechre fan, probably isn't going to listen to every single thing when they have so many records, EPs, not only that, but EPs that are, you know, hours and hours long, records that are 8 hours long, you know, it's definitely like gets lost in the mix a little bit.
Yeah. 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 It's funny. I feel like I got spoiled by the Warp tapes because I was like, oh, well then we're definitely going to get a wave file of Societas X tape for sure.
Yeah,
because Autechre did it. Same. And, I was refreshing. I was checking every day. Nope, still not. But all right, sort of wrapping up now on that note, listener Ella calls the Warp Tapes an underrated release and essential for anyone who's a fan of Autechre's early era. But what do you think? Is that how you describe it? Underrated and essential?
I don't know about essential. You know, I think definitely underrated. I mean, we just spent the last couple minutes explaining that. But, you know, essential... I don't think so. You know, it's definitely cool. It's definitely, I think, if you're interested in, you know, early electronic music, or I mean, obviously, if you're a big enough fan of Autechre to be listening to this podcast, you should check it out. But, you know, just for your average fan, I don't think, you know, it's you gotta hear it. I don't think you'll be disappointed if you do take the time. But, you know, it's a big ask, I think, you know, to sit through 2 hour long mixes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, I feel like it's not, I mean, underrated for sure, but it's not like essential for every Autechre fan to hear, even though I think they're doing themselves a disservice by not hearing it because it's really great. But like the paradoxical part is that I feel like it's almost essential for electronic music fans, you know. Not exactly like Autechre specialists, but it's like there are just so many people, and I used to be one of these people, and I almost kind of still am, but it's like, you know, it's easy to think of like electronic music started with Selected Ambiworks by Aphex Twin, you know, and you kind of think like, you know, that's really where the golden age starts, and I think that's true. But like if you're interested in kind of like branching back and like kind of getting into like an earlier era or something, this is like the perfect first record to do that, I feel like, because if you're that kind of person, you probably already kind of like Autechre, even if you're not a crazy obsessive fan. But it's like this is like the perfect bridge that I think will get you into some of that pre-Warp electronic music, pre-IDM electronic music. So it's like, I don't know, I wish it had like more fanfare around it, because I feel like a lot of people would really benefit from like learning that they actually kind of like this more vintage style. So yeah, I would kind of call it like essential to electronic music fans. And yeah, if we're talking Autechre's early era, if you like that, then yeah, definitely essential. Now, I'm not sure if we're officially ranking this. In fact, I decided not to bring it up so I could like sort of ask you on air, but if we were going to rank it, where do you think it would kind of loosely end up in Autechre's entire career? Is there any chance, you know, you like it more than Incunabula? Is it better than some of like our least favorite albums, say, like Draft or Oversteps, better than any albums at all?
I mean, I definitely don't like it more than Incunabula. I think, you know, Incunabula is a better put together record. I was thinking about it, you know, I don't know if it would be better than any Autechre record, you know, LP. It's definitely better than, I think, like a lot of, you know, some of these lower rated EPs, you know, from my personal list. Yeah. You know, Draft, looking at my list now, you know, Draft is my lowest rated LP. I don't know if it would go above that. I don't think so. You know, I think this is better than some of those EPs, but not better than any of the, like, you know, actual regular, you know, LPs albums.
Yeah, it's tough because it feels like a less serious artistic.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I think maybe I enjoy listening to it more than Draft or something. But yeah, that's my reasoning too.
That's what pisses me off. If they released it like for real, I feel like even I'm being affected by like how chill they are about it. Because if they put the fanfare around it, I would be like, this is like, you know, one of like Autechre's greatest like works almost, you know. It's like, you know, it wouldn't be like in my top 10 necessarily, but it's like so good.
Yeah.
Even if it's not like quite as inventive, obviously, as they would be, but it's like just so, so good. But it just feels like this weird little bonus thing, and it's going to have that stink on it forever until it gets some like, you know, 30th anniversary reissue or something like that, when we're like 60 years old. But all right. So any closing thoughts on this chapter of the AE journey? Trying to get out of here before we go as long as the Warp Tapes themselves. But, you know, how did it go with the Warp Tapes? Did you enjoy yourself these past 2 weeks?
Yeah, I enjoyed myself. You know, I think sometimes, like I said, it got a little tiring listening to such high octane, especially, you know, right as I got into work, you know, at 9 in the morning. Yeah. You know, it was a little early for clubbing, but you know, I definitely enjoyed it. You know, it was nice to spend time with like that older style of electronic music, because like you said, you know, I'm kind of in that same vein. You know, I love a lot of the stuff from like, you know, really early, you know, 60s, you know, Moog things, and then kind of a gap until Selected Ambient works. So it was nice to you know, explore a little bit of that period that I'm not as familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we talked about it on the Sign episode, but it's like, for me, Sign almost makes me appreciate some of these like earlier kind of synth sounds. You know, you just kind of remember like, oh, you know, the sound of like a Juno 106 or something. Mm-hmm. It used to be like the most cutting edge thing ever, and it's actually like a totally amazing, wild, weird sound. The sound of like an 808 or something is, you know, there's a lot of Autechre stuff that kind of does that. Like I said, they kind of throw in these almost throwback kind of sounds sometimes throughout their career. And it always just kind of makes you appreciate, because they put it like in this sort of weird context. You kind of appreciate like, man, electronic music is just fucking weird and fucking cool. And this whole thing is that. Like, it really just like sort of like makes me love and appreciate like this sort of bygone era, like in this very nostalgic way. You know, so I really enjoyed nostalgia on it, and I really, especially coming back from Sign and Bus all the way back to the Warp Tapes was like really kind of a fun treat.
Yeah, definitely. Well, what do you think about the Warp Tapes? We're doing another listener email episode next week, so send us your thoughts. gunkcastpod@gmail.com. Next proper episode in 2 weeks, both artificial intelligence compilations. We want your opinions and hot takes on those as well. gunkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up, YouTube, Snake Connected, Twitter, Instagram. Those are @gunkcastpod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.